Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
J.P. Cooper is a British singer and songwriter. Since his recording debut in 2017, he's become known for a signature blend of folk, pop, soul, and more. With two critically acclaimed LPs, Raised Under Grey Skies and She Under His Belt, the heights he has now achieved could only be expected with his relentless pursuit of a vision. The artist's debut, Raised Under Grey Skies, has sold over 1 million copies thanks to releases like September Song, now with over 1 billion global streams and fans as far as South Africa, Tokyo, and more regions. His debut album is 3x platinum in the UK, gold or platinum certified in 11 other countries, and he boasts an incredible 6 billion streams worldwide and counting. As well as hit collaboration Perfect Strangers with Jonas Blue, JP has worked with the likes of Bugsy Malone, Koji Radical, SG Lewis, Gabriel Aplin, Stefflon Don, Petite Biscuit, as well as Stormzy on Mama's Prayers. In 2026, JP releases his third album, Just a Few Folk. The project speaks to his current mindset as a person and as a musician. His state of being content in one's uniqueness and no longer chasing mass approval, rather searching for the fellow outliers and thinkers that resonate. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got JP Cooper.
JP, where are you in the world and how are you doing?
I am in Hampshire in the UK. I'm about an hour south of London. I'm currently in my little studio space and I'm doing great. Yeah, I've been spending a lot of time in here. I've got a lot going on at the minute, lots to look forward to. I've been spending a lot more time with family the last few months, which has been really, really nice.
Let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, okay, I want to be creating music, I want to be in this space, and how did that journey progress?
I think as soon as I started writing something that looked like songs, I very, very quickly made my mind up that that was it. I was probably only about 15 or 16. Music came a little bit late in terms of me playing it. I wasn't in a household where I was trained or taught or anything like that. There was a lot of art in the house, a lot of paintings and things like that, but it wasn't like a professional thing. It was never a business. I think the thing that really got me into music was being in Manchester in the kind of late 90s. Oasis were one of the biggest bands in the world. And yeah, it was a case of my environment, really. And then, of course, when I did start to delve into that, you know, the fact that my family were such creatives, it was supported. So really, really grateful for that. But very quickly, I don't do things by halves. So when I make my mind up about something, that tends to be it.
But I think that anyone, if they want to pursue a passion or pursue something that's in their heart, it has to be full on. Because if it's by halves, it means there's distractions. It means there might be procrastination. It means there might be things that are not completed. So the success won't follow, potentially. Just putting that out there.
For sure. I mean, it's funny, actually. You know, so I have a 8-9-month-old baby at home at the minute. Often it wakes up in the middle of the night a few times. And last night, baby woke up and, you know, my wife wakes up and I wake up. And I really struggle to go back to sleep because instantly, all I think about is music. I'm either thinking about a song. I'm thinking about something to do with this world. It's an obsession. And I'm grateful that it is. But at the same time, it can sometimes be an unhealthy obsession. But that's just the way it is.
So you referenced earlier that when you decided that you wanted to pursue it, you went full on and full out. What were the next steps to you becoming professional? And were there any aspects when you did become professional that surprised you that you didn't realize would be part of the process?
It was really a long, slow process for me before I got to call myself a professional. You know, I wasn't a trained musician, so I wasn't earning any money. I wasn't, you know, going out and playing in any other capacity. I was playing in little bands, local bands in Manchester. But I fully committed to that. You know, we spent our money on rehearsal spaces and equipment and, you know, the little money that we made from our part-time jobs. And that continued all the way through my 20s. I joined the gospel choir in that time, trying to sort of expand my knowledge and the kind of melting pot of sounds that I was able to, I guess, marinate myself in Manchester with it being so multicultural. I was really, really looking for that. But yeah, it wasn't until I was 30 that I actually signed a record deal. And by this point, you know, my oldest son was about 2. So I don't really know what I expected at that point. You know, I built a bit of an audience myself. I'd never done any writing with other people up until that point. So that was a very new thing, you know, the writing sessions and things like that. But I guess it all kind of happened when I was very much an adult. So it wasn't like I was this wide-eyed. I was more kind of just rolling with the punches because I had kids at home and I was kind of felt like I was treading water to just keep my head above and make it happen. So I guess in a way I was kind of swept along with it. I think now, only really now, am I really understanding the true nature of the world that I found myself in, especially as a business and especially as an industry. And there's a lot of it that I don't like, but you know, gratefully, I still love my job. I guess it's different for everybody, but that's one thing that I hang on to, is that I'm grateful that every time I get to come into this room and sit at the piano.
How do you create a song?
I've talked quite a lot about this lately. I've recently started kind of trying to post things on Instagram or of me showing a little bit more of the kind of bare bones of things, because I think nowadays, especially with this rise of AI and all this kind of stuff, there's a lot more people that probably couldn't break down the way they do things. And I think it's really important to not only show the polished stuff, because really robots can do the polished stuff. It's really important that I kind of learn to be as human as I can. And being a bit of a perfectionist, I'm having to, you know, unlearn that so that I can share the honesty with people. I'm somebody who kind of writes daily, like most days. If I'm not in a writing session or if I'm not on the road, I will come into the studio. It's almost like a 9-5, you know. I get up at 1 and I come to the studio. I make something. So it isn't necessarily waiting around for a bolt of lightning to kind of come out of the sky and hit me. It's a case of chasing things that light me up. So if I sit at the piano or I sit at the guitar, maybe I'll find a few chords that make me feel something, and I'll probably loop them. I'll play them. I don't tend to record because I like things to be fluid and move whenever they can. A lot of the time I go home with just a video of me singing and playing the song. So that is often the little spark will be me sitting with an instrument. But then sometimes I think I've learned to always be open to things that may be the spark for a song. The other day I went for a coffee in a place that's like a Greasy Spoon. I spoke about this. A Greasy Spoon in the UK is like it's where you go for like a fried breakfast, you know, and they're very sort of working class places, not fancy, nothing like that. I was thinking about how I love those places and I'm kind of tired of these bougie hipster spots. Like they seem to be quite soulless. And I was chatting to an Irish guy who he's moved to the States, and he told me that his friends, it made me think about that, this being in this Greasy Spoon, how his friends had started to say that when he goes back home, they say that he has notions. And I've never really heard that before, and it was saying, you know, you've got these notions, you're changing because you're in America. So that was a little spark. So I'm always kind of switched on to these little things that might pop out that I can then develop.
How much of your creativity is by yourself and with others? Is it like 50%, 50%, or just depends?
Lately, it has been much more heavily by myself because I'm really, really enjoying that. And I think I'm growing in confidence without feeling like I need to bring somebody in. I'm also getting a lot more disciplined at finishing songs. I think in a lot of my records in the past, I love to write with, but I think in the future, it'll be a lot more weighted in towards me being the kind of, you know, 100% writer on a lot of the songs. But I love working with other people. I love working with people on their projects, for their projects. That's something that I've started doing a lot more, you know. It allows me to be a lot freer in the way that I think about things. I love writing by myself because I don't need to convince anybody of anything. I just follow my own instincts.
You mentioned earlier about growing in confidence to write by yourself. Was there a little bit of doubt, a little bit of maybe fear or something that was saying to you, okay, well, you need that other person to bounce off of? Or was it just about growth in your space that allowed it to happen?
I think that I found myself in the commercial world and I never really expected to be there. Even though I signed a record deal, I didn't expect to be in this kind of Radio One Capital kind of world. You know, when I found myself in that world and I felt this expectation from, you know, record labels and the people around me to continue to perform in that space, that was when the uncertainty and the lack of confidence in that field crept in, because I never planned on writing pop songs. You know, it was never the plan. So I think at that point I thought, well, I'm going to need to bring some people in who can steer me back to the center when I start going too far left. Nowadays, I think because I've spent so much time in that world, I've learned an element of pop sensibility whilst allowing myself to go off to the left if I want to, and understanding how to steer myself back to a place where it's palatable while still really, really satisfying myself. I think it's taken me all of this time to kind of get there. Up until then, I was really relying on other people to be like, okay, JP is getting a little bit off piste now. And now this is why I love being on my own, because I can explore all of those avenues without worrying about anybody else's feelings of commercial success. I think a lot of the problem is writers don't get paid as well as a lot of people think. So if they're trying to make album tracks, they're going to have to put so many of them out. So all the writers are going for, you know, jobbing songwriters, they're all going for the big singles. Mm. They're the ones, they're the gifts that keep on giving. But you don't want to do that in every session, you know. So for me, it's nice for me to be on my own without a feeling like I'm dragging somebody into the, you know, into songs that maybe aren't going to make them as much money. I don't have to worry about that when I'm by myself.
You referenced earlier that you are now collaborating and creating for others. How long have you been doing that for? And you referenced it's also freeing in a certain way. In what way is it freeing?
So I'll begin with the last question. It's really freeing because I get to kind of step into their shoes for a minute. I stop thinking about what people expect from me, and I almost get to play these different roles. You know, I get to use words that I would never use because it wouldn't be sincere to me. I get to play with sounds that I wouldn't necessarily choose. And I'm always learning by the way that other people do things. I think this is the cool thing about stepping into a situation where I'm not the artist. I'm just seeing where I can be useful, and I'm trying to kind of help another artist. So seeing the way that they work and the way that they show up is amazing, and I learn little tricks from them. But yeah, I think the main thing is just this freedom of I don't need to be the person that carries this song. I can just help it come into the world. You know, I don't need to go out. I can leave the studio. I don't have to worry about how I'm going to promote it, how I'm going to do it live. It's all about the song and all about serving the artist. And I think because I've been an artist for so long, and I've usually been the person who everybody else has been working on that with, it's nice for me to come and be on the other stand, understanding the psychology of an artist in that situation, and just trying to be helpful, trying to encourage. And I really, really enjoy that. I love making my own records, but it's nice to step out of that world now and again. It's almost like a palate cleanser. So yes, that's a great thing.
And how long have you been doing that for now?
I've only really started doing it a lot more regularly in this last year. I wrote a song that Liam Payne released, another one with Jonah Ford, but four other people. And now it's a lot more. So the guy who's produced my album, Cam Blackwood, he has a studio, and we kind of teamed up, and obviously he's on the buttons. And then we sit down, we sit at the piano, we bring artists in, whether it's new artists or old artists. And we've been doing that as a much more of a regular thing, as like a partnership. That's been a lot of fun.
Now, you've collaborated with another friend of the podcast, a friend of mine, Hannah V. and you worked together on The Beatles, amongst other projects. You worked on The Beatles. I think you recorded that, if I remember correctly, at Abbey Road. What was the inspiration behind that collaboration and that specific idea?
Hannah and I have worked together for a long time. Hannah was actually my first session that I did. You know, when I signed a record deal, she reached out and said, oh, do you want to come and do some writing? I've never done any writing sessions before that. I'd only ever worked by myself. So I came down to London and I worked with her. And when I met her, I was like, where do I know you from? And I'd actually supported Layla Hathaway in Manchester, and Hannah was playing keys for her at the time. So there was a little bit of history there. But we did a few sessions, and then we just became long-time collaborators, really. She'd demo up a lot of my things for me. She had a track on the first and second album that she produced. And a lot of these live sessions, you know, Hannah would come in. She's an amazing coordinator, and the way that she pulls people together, and her energy in that situation. She's so cool under pressure when there are time constraints and we need to get things done. This was one of those sessions. I was recording a bunch of live versions of songs from my album. But because we were in Abbey Road, we thought, if we've got time at the end of the session, let's try and record a Beatles cover. Yeah, we managed to find a bit of time at the end, and we, you know, we threw an arrangement in, and it became what it was. And, you know, now it's been shared a lot. People seem to really enjoy it. I think it's moved a lot of people deeply. I think, you know, so many people that have reached out to me and said, you know, it's been played at my father's funeral or things like this. So it's really, really beautiful to have, you know, created a moment that can bring peace to people.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklets, the thank yous, etc., etc. I'm unsure if you may or may not be aware, there's a massive uptick of physical around the world. 2 years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And based on these exchanges, they monitor it for tax purposes. There needs to be a high number of exchanges every day for a product to be in the basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. And the research is showing it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids diving into this world, not necessarily the older, in inverted commas, nostalgic people. Then we have the streaming platforms and DSPs that people consume music on. What are your observations or perceptions of the landscape at the moment?
The first thing it makes me think of, obviously, as an artist, is where the money goes. It's a real mess. There's so many hands in the pot. You know, when it's streaming, artists get so little. Physical sales, definitely, I think there's more that goes to the artist. You know, there's not as many people involved in that. But sadly, you know, it is something that has died. I was always a big fan of, it's funny, I went back to my dad's house for my birthday over that weekend. And, you know, I've got stacks and stacks of CDs there that I collected. And I used to sort of save up my money and go to a place in Manchester called the Vinyl Exchange. And I didn't buy vinyl, I bought CDs. But they had rows and rows and rows of CDs. And what was great about that place was, they would have little leaflets next to some of the records that the staff would write on that would say, for fans of Portishead, Massive Attack, and Bjork, whatever. And every week I would kind of push myself to, if I had enough money, I would go in and I'd buy a record by somebody that I never knew. And it's great that we've got this amazing new way of consuming music. It's amazing what we have access to. But there isn't the same investment in, you know, because I sometimes bought records, believe it or not, I bought Grace by Jeff Buckley and I didn't love it on first listen. I didn't really get it. And then it sat maybe for a few years. And then there was something that pulled me back to it. And all of a sudden it made sense. Now, I don't think I would have given it a second listen if I hadn't have bought it. You know, I would have listened once and be like, oh, I'm not a fan. And then it became something that I absolutely loved. And, you know, now it's in my, you know, the top records of all time. And this is the thing, you know, there's not that investment. People just go, they listen to the one song. There's a lot of people that maybe know one or two songs from an artist. But the people that I was into, you know, I knew what song was coming next on the record, and I knew, you know, often knew about the players and things like that. So that's a shame. I do believe that there is a divide that is happening and will happen. And I think AI is going to be that line in the sand where it's going to be so easy to create polished music that kind of, you know, it's got a vibe to it. It's cool. But I think there's going to be a divide where people really want to know about the person who's writing it. Like what is their story, and what is, you know, where does that come from? And I actually feel like it's almost like when punk came along, you know, and everything before that was kind of maybe classic rock, and these were more educated musicians. And then punk came along and it was like, give me three chords and some attitude. I feel like there's almost going to be another thing where it's like, well, we don't want to hear these studio perfect recordings. We want to hear the room, and we want to hear them breathing on the mic.
As referenced earlier, I've seen you perform live a couple of times. What do you love about being on stage?
It's definitely about the connection with the crowd. I think I'm not like a performer. I'm not, that isn't where my gifting is in terms of entertainment. You know, I think I'm coming more to terms with that and realizing that my job is to have a connection. And for me, it's what I love about it. And even night after night, you know, I might be singing the same songs, but the crowd changes every night and I get to see them. It's like watching a different movie every night, seeing the little relationships and seeing the moments between couples or father and daughter, or, you know, all of these beautiful, beautiful moments that I get to see. And also being reminded, because, you know, a lot of the time we're in these little rooms, you know, making music, and we're in the studio and we're behind a screen and we're seeing messages from people that are really beautiful messages. But until you see these people in person, in one place, that's when it kind of lands and it's like, wow, this is actually, not only is it a great job, but it's an important job that I'm doing here. And it's nice to be reminded of that.
Okay, so I'm that dude that's right up in front. I'll take my cell phone out for maybe one or two videos, one or two photos, and then I'll put it away. I notice these days that people are videoing and tweeting and posting and doing a lot with the phone and turning their heads from the stage and filming themselves with you behind small. In fact, yeah, that was at one of your shows, and I was actually astonished, because this girl was so excited and your favorite artist. And yet for the majority of the show, she turned her back to the stage with you sort of small in the background and was filming her face with you small in the background. And I was like, you're missing the show. From a person that sees a bunch of phones, potentially, compared to people's eyes, do you not feel that takes away from the connection you're referencing? Or again, it's just where society is?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably an element of that. But I think, and this has always been happening, but it seems more apparent now, that the relationship between an artist and somebody who goes and watches that artist or listens to that artist is, artists used to be these people that were kind of, you couldn't touch them, and they were kind of, you know, they were there, and they were these big special people who you go to them because, you know, that you want to know more about them. Now I feel like we're just creating the music for their show. And in a way, it's like, I'm actually kind of all right with that. I don't need to be front and center all the time. I'm happy for people to just enjoy what I'm doing. So it's almost like everybody nowadays is the star of their own show. We just get to try and make the soundtrack for it. And I kind of like that.
It's an interesting perspective. I never thought about it before. So thank you for that. It makes it more sense in my brain. So thank you. Tell us, what's coming up over the next period of time?
So I guess the big thing is my new album, Just a Few Folk, is coming out in February. So I am trying to put together, to start figuring out what taking that out on the road looks out. I think I'm being a little bit more careful with what I do. Obviously, I've got kids at home and stuff now, and it just needs to make sense. So I'm trying to figure out how I want to do that. And again, thinking of leaning more into this. Again, nowadays, there's a lot of people using auto-tune live, and they've got all of this track, and they've got all of this show and this performance. And I'm like, I think I really, really want to strip away the bells and whistles and find a way. I think, again, it's me trying to learn to be brave enough to do what I think is the best of me rather than trying to exist in an arena that I don't fit. So that's something that I'm kind of working on at the minute. I might end up just really stripping things back and just going out with me and a couple of people and creating experiences that are really human. And it isn't about the person on stage being a star or doing this amazing show. It's about creating opportunities for connection and just to be together as human beings. Because I think that's something that we're really, really, really missing. So that's something that I'll be kind of thinking about and trying to put that together and figure out how best to take that and create that for people. But at the minute, I'm just really, really enjoying. I'm completely in love with writing songs. And I think more so now than I ever have been. I'm just so excited about that.
I love this next game. I know if I had to ask you this question tomorrow or the next day or the next day, I know your answers will be different every time. I appreciate that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite, top of mind. If you had to, once we finish this conversation, push play to five other artists, who would those artists be?
So where I'm at now, first one that comes to my mind, just because it's my morning music, is Toots and the Maytals. It's good time music. It brings that sunshine when the weather's not great. Aretha's always in there. I've been listening to quite a bit of Rufus Wainwright, earlier stuff. And let's go Chris Cornell, Soundgarden, and Bill Withers.
So JP, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
Thank you for this platform. Thanks for the space to talk and, you know, to kind of chew on these questions a little bit. If you don't know me, I hope that the music that I've made finds a place in your home, in your heart at some point, whether it's one song, whether it's an album. And I hope if you come to the show one day that we have an amazing experience.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.